You're listening to Trek FM.
Hi, this is Garrett Wong. I played Ensign Harry Kim on Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey.
To the journey.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is To the Journey.
To the journey!
I am your co-host, Tristan Riddell, and with me, as always, is...
Charlene Schmidt.
Now, Charlene Schmidt, we have a special treat for our listeners today because, you know, the show is called To the Journey, and we have an opening about Harry Kim's speech about how it's not about the destination, it's about the journey. And we have his voice in the intro, and we also have a bumper featuring Garrett Wong saying, "You're listening to Trek.fm." Now, we have a trifecta for you because we actually have, for the first time, on To the Journey, Garrett Wong himself. Garrett, thank you so much for taking the time out of your very busy schedule and doing this podcast with us today.
Thank you. I wasn't sure if I was supposed to yell To the Journey with you. So.
Oh, you sure can if you want.
Well, I just want to say that we are such big fans of not only, you know, like the show and the acting that you've done, but really, I mean, you were so interactive with the fans, like when you go to conventions and when you go online. And Char, I believe you have a story to tell real quick.
I do. I have a very quick story to tell about this. This happened about 20 years ago. This was back in the days of AOL. That's how old it is. But I think I read maybe in... Yeah, ooh, is right. Ancient caveman days. I think Star Trek Communicator, maybe, the Star Trek magazine, had like a little interview with you or something, and you had an AOL screen name that they published. And so, of course, at 14 years old, guess what I did? I wrote you. And a couple months later, I was astonished when Garrett Wong wrote me back on AOL. And I think he just sent me a very brief thing like, "Hey, thank you for writing in and thanks for supporting Voyager." And my 14-year-old self was just so giddy, excited about that. I just couldn't stand it because this was, you know, the dark ages of the internet. This sort of interaction just didn't happen. We take advantage of it now, but back then that was quite the novelty. And it just goes to show that you've always been really interactive with your fans, even back then.
Yeah, that's definitely true. Are you sure the email didn't continue that I was a Nigerian royalty member with $34 billion that I had to send into your bank account?
Oh my gosh, so you have been writing me this whole time and I've just been putting it in my spam folder? Oh no!
I was going to say, Garrett, we've exchanged like 50 emails then, if that's the case.
I know, that's... I have cloned myself, so I'm able to send those mails to everyone.
Wow.
So is that difficult at any times, like being a public figure, being in the public eye, and being socially network active?
Yeah, I mean, it takes time, you know, definitely. But the other thing is, I have to also mention is that I have always been and continue to be a geek at heart. I've always, you know, I love science fiction. I love fantasy. I love all the different genres that people enjoy when they attend a convention. That's the best way to put it, you know? So it's easy for me to be magnanimous or kind and passionate about responding to fans or taking the time to say something to a fan. You know, that's always been a part of me because I'm a fan myself, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And that's definitely something I've noticed because we've met before at conventions and you do a lot of conventions throughout the year. And you've been running the Trek track of DragonCon for the last several years. And so what is it about conventions that, you know, keeps you doing so many of them? I mean, is it the fan interaction?
Yeah, but it started primarily because I needed an outlet. I needed a chance, an opportunity to share with fans the fact that I had a sense of humor.
And you do.
If you Yeah, because if you watch Voyager, you know, your first reaction is, oh, wow, he's so serious. Or man, that Bob Picardo as the Doctor, he's the funny one of the gang. He's the funniest of all. And that's not true. I mean, it really, Voyager did not showcase the comic stylings of everyone else. And I'm telling you right now, everybody else is very funny. Kate Mulgrew, yes, very funny. No one's going to know that, you know. Robert Beltran, very funny.
Oh, yeah.
Robbie Duncan McNeil, who played Tom Paris, is, I think, the funniest person by far on the show. He cracks me up all the time. But you don't see that because the Voyager writer and producers did not take advantage of that. One thing which I think was magical about that show is that each of those series regulars was a barrel of monkeys, you know, and they didn't take advantage of that. I really think that should have been something that they should have played up upon, because not everybody has great comic timing.
Have to totally agree. Yeah, I was at Vegas for the 15th reunion, and getting you all together on stage, man, we could not all get enough of you guys. You were fantastic. It was such a good time.
Oh, you're talking about last year?
Yes. That was Voyager Christmas. That was as good as it's going to get.
Now, did you ever pitch something to the network to maybe add some more humor or use you guys a little bit more with your comedic timing?
All the time. I mean, I constantly said to those guys, I go, please allow us human characters to be funny. Please let us shine. I said one time, I said, here, why don't we have a B storyline where, you know, Voyager has a shipwide talent show, you know, and then let Kim get up there and start doing his impersonation of everyone else. Like, you know, I like to impersonate the Doctor and Janeway and Paris and Chakotay. I like to impersonate those guys. And I pitched this, you know, time and time again. And it was like running into a brick wall. They were like, nope, not interested, not interested, not interested. So it was really, you know, to me, it's a shame. It really is a shame. And I've said this before. I honestly believe that if someone was to have a camera rolling in between takes, so when we weren't filming, but when we were just goofing off on the bridge in between takes, if someone was to capture the magic that happened, the comedic tone that was always happening while we were together, if they were to record that and edit that together in some coherent fashion, that would be, and if they aired that on television, that would be the number one sitcom in America. By far. In the world. It would make Big Bang Theory look like, you know, nothing, like kindergarten topic. Like, it's like, okay, that's just whatever. We'd rather watch Voyager people talking. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and come on, as fans, I think we would all pay a lot of really good money to see that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. We don't have a good blooper reel or anything like that that's out there, you know? So it'd be nice to see that.
It really would.
It sounds like you have a lot of respect for your castmates. One thing I've always kind of wondered is that you post a lot of pictures on social media, on Twitter, of you at conventions, and specifically with your former castmates from Voyager. Did you have any idea once the show wrapped that you would still be in such contact with your former castmates?
I never doubted it. I've always felt that, yes, I would keep in contact with these people. I mean, you spend that amount of time together. And, you know, people say, well, okay, 7 years. But 7 years in and of itself is a long time. But 7 years of concentrated, you know, I mean, if you're talking about an average workday, if we're there anywhere between 14 to 17 hours, you know, or 12 to 17 hours each day, you get you spend a lot of time with each other. So naturally the friendships you develop in that span, that time span, tend to be kind of tight. And the men, you know, we've had a ongoing meeting or ongoing dinner that we meet up at for the last, literally since the end of the show, when the show ended, every 2 to 3 months we meet at the Palm Restaurant in West Hollywood. And it would be myself and all the men of Voyager. And it would be so funny whenever we would, you know, we'd meet up, and then when the maitre d' would show us to the table, just looking at the faces of the other diners that are familiar with Voyager, when they saw us walk past, they'd be like, oh my goodness, they're back in the Alpha Quadrant. You know, they're so, you know, super excited, you know, to see us. So those are wonderful times. I look upon those dinners with very, very fond memories of just good times and just joking about everything. I mean, we love to laugh. We haven't had them as frequently because we've lost people to moves. Ethan Phillips, who plays Neelix, has moved to New York City. And we tried in the beginning to just, we would have a speakerphone, you know, we would have him on whatever, just someone's cell phone and on speakerphone. And it would just be too, it wouldn't be the same. It'd be tough to hear him, and it would be quite loud in the restaurant. And so it wasn't the ideal situation. And so I think we need to either all go to New York at the same time or wait until Ethan comes back to LA to have another one probably. So,
well, I really look forward to seeing the photo of you guys when you do get together and have that dinner, because I love to see those. It's just, it makes me smile seeing you guys all together. I mean, we can tell you're having a good time, and we're happy for you that you're all having a good time. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Now, earlier you talked about, you know, like pitching certain ideas to the brass. One thing that Shar and I absolutely love is we found this where your idea for how Voyager should have ended, you know, like making Endgame a cliffhanger, you know, and then continuing that in a movie. You know, have you developed this idea any further? Do you have any more headcanon that you can share with us?
Yeah. Please tell us you've got a story, because I think this is exactly how it should have happened. If there was ever an opportunity for Voyager to be a movie, this was it. And we just darn it, it didn't happen.
The minute a time machine is invented, I'm going to jump in it. I'm going to go back in time, and I'm going to take a 9mm handgun and put it to the head of Rick Berman. And I'm going to tell him, I'm saying, this is what you're going to do. You're not going to film Star Trek Nemesis, that piece of crap TNG movie. You're not going to do it. You're going to make Voyager, the movie that you film. It's going to be a 2.5-hour extravaganza that really shows the struggle with the Borg, instead of making it look like you beat the Borg in 1 second. You know, it's going to be amazing. And when you do this, I guarantee you, Berman, that you the box office will be strong, as strong or better than the best Trek movies that have ever come out. And I think that's what they should have done, because let's face it, the last two TNG movies were worse than TNG episodes. There's TNG episodes that were better, and when you're doing movie, any movie, the movie has to, I mean, outshine everything, you know.
Yes.
So I'm going to strong arm Rick Berman if a time machine gets invented.
All right.
Do at this point. Yeah.
Oh, if I just really hope that technology is on its way. I really, really want you to do this.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I just did a convention with Robbie McNeil, Tom Paris, and we were talking about
saw the photos.
How, we were just talking about how it'd be cool if we shot like a web series that was just Captain Proton, like a Captain Proton web series, you know.
Pop out.
Just imagine that, 3 to 5 minute episodes. Yeah. You know,
we would
came
eat
out
that
once
up
every
so
couple.
Hardcore.
People would love it. And the thing I will tell you right now, there would not be an issue calling up Kate Mulgrew, and I mean, she would jump at the chance to play Arachnia. You know, Queen of the Spider People again. So I mean, that's just
it's
just wonderful, because she got to ham it up. You know what I'm saying? I mean, she's so damn serious for the whole show. So
it's
so nice to see it when there's some levity involved. You know,
I was going to ask you if you've seen Con Man with Alan Tudyk and Nathan Fillion.
No, I haven't. I've seen little clips of it. You know, and it's funny because I know Nathan, but Alan Tudyk, I've been trying to meet forever. And I finally, you know, was at a convention that he was at. We were in the green room. It was during lunch. And one of my biggest pet peeves is, and I'm very cordial and I'm very open to meeting anybody fan-wise, but, you know, my number one pet peeve is don't come up while I'm mid-bite. if that makes sense. If I've got a fork in my mouth, then you come up, hi, can I get a selfie? I'm like, that's what I'm kind of like, I'm eating here, right? Well, yeah. What do I do when I meet Tudyk? Tudyk's eating a salad, right? So I tap him on the shoulder. He turns around and he's got a piece of salad hanging out of his mouth, and he leaves it there on purpose, you know, just to sort of, in a way, say like, dude, I'm eating, in a nonverbal way. And I sat there and I went, oh my God, I just did the one thing that I hate what everyone, you know, what someone else does to me. So that meeting didn't go very well. After that, I was like,
darn it.
That's not good. Yeah. Fillion, funny enough, when I met him, this is years ago while Voyager was being filmed, and it was a birthday party in downtown Los Angeles at a jazz club or something like that. The party was for Keanu Reeves, I think. So I knew somebody who knew him, so I was there. I bump into Fillion, and Fillion comes up, he's like, hey man, we've got to exchange numbers. You and me, we have got to party. He said something like that. Right? So I had this, and I'm sitting here going, what have people been telling you, or what's been getting out there? So, you know, this crazy party boy reputation had been going out there. And I consider myself fairly tame when it comes to, you know, if you were to put me on the meter, you know how they have meters of like how hot a chili is? Like, okay, this ghost chili is 55,000 BTUs or whatever, right? Well, if you have a party graph showing like who partied the most, obviously the one at the top, the hottest chili or the hardest partier would be Charlie Sheen, you know, by far, right? I would be a very mild chili on that little list. But evidently my reputation was that I was, you know, the ghost chili of partiers. And it shocked me. I was like, whoa, okay. I'll exchange numbers with you, Nathan Fillion. Okay. It was just odd. It was really weird. So.
Interesting.
But no, I've only seen clips. Have you guys been watching Con Man? Is it great?
Yeah, it's a fantastic web series, and it's about Alan Tudyk doesn't play himself. He plays a character that's based on himself, and so does Nathan Fillion, about people who were a part of a sci-fi show, and it got canceled, and then they go to conventions and realize that the fans that they meet at the conventions are awesome, and it's an outlet for them. And I immediately thought of you. I thought, I was like, man, like Garrett Wong needs to be in season two. And they just started announcing plans for season two. So Nathan, Alan, if you're listening, I think you should use that number that you exchanged with Garrett and give him a call so he can be in season two.
You know what? I think since it's Alan's pet project, I think the only way, after that horrible first meeting, the only way for me to be in Con Man is for me to hit up Nathan. And maybe that will be the storyline, you know, of I'd be the partying crazy, you know, sci-fi actor. I don't know.
There you go.
Do with that. But we'll see. Maybe that would work. The other thing that came up to my attention is that, did you guys know that Seth MacFarlane is actually doing a Trek based sort of sci-fi comedic show? Did you guys know that?
No.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Oh.
Live action. What do you know?
Live action, not animated. Live action.
Okay.
In association with Fox. Yeah, I just read this because a fan tweeted me saying, "Garrett, looks like Seth. You know, looks like Seth stole your idea." Because I've been talking about it, you know, at conventions in the last couple of years. I said, good Lord, there needs to be a Trek show on the same order of how Scrubs is to ER, how Brooklyn Nine-Nine is to any cop show that's not comedic. You know what I'm saying? I mean, there isn't that. And I kept thinking, that's what I want to do, you know. And evidently, I've been beaten to the punch. It looks like Seth's doing it because he's a huge Star Trek fan.
Did this just come out today?
This came out. News? I got. I was tweeted this yesterday. So yes, this is a recent announcement.
Okay.
So it looks like the show's coming out in 2017.
Okay. Gotta look.
And
for
who knows? Maybe I should. Yeah. Maybe I should message Seth and just say, hey, bud, great minds think alike.
There you go.
Something like that.
Yeah, maybe that's your it.
Like that, yeah. Let me
help
collaborate. You know, let me play an alien on your show or something like that. I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah.
That'd be fun.
That'd be great.
And of course, everyone knows about the new CBS Trek that's coming out also too, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, how do you feel about that, about Star Trek coming back to the small screen?
Very excited. I mean, it's been it's kind of crazy to think about. Enterprise went off the air in 2005. So that's 11 years of no Trek TV series.
Yeah.
And you know, and if you're talking about, you know, our generation or anybody who's Gen X, Y, or Z, they've been very lucky in from the 80s all the way through 2005 to have a ongoing Trek show happening during that period. You know, that's a long time to have always turned on and have a new Trek episode airing. And all of a sudden, you have the Sahara Desert of Trek where there's nothing, you know, for so long. But I'm really excited. I'm really excited because it's been announced. I guess it's a couple of the producers that you know, worked with JJ there and there. But the other executive producer that's been announced, or the other two, one of them is Rod Roddenberry, the son of Gene Roddenberry, mm-hmm. who I'm friends with. So he's part of it, which is great. Brian Fuller is absolutely one of my favorite writers, and Brian Fuller was actually a staff writer on Voyager.
Yes, indeed.
And he was let go. Now, when he got let go, I was pissed. I remember going up to the office going, "What are you guys doing?" Like, "Oh yeah, you know, well, you know, things happen." I'm like, "Things happen?" I said, "He's a great writer. He's a great guy. What are you doing?" I was absolutely livid that he was let go. And it's so funny that now it's come full circle that now he's going to be running the show. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
and when they let him go, he went off and did some wonderful things. He did Dead Like Me, Pushing Daisies.
Hannibal.
And most recently Hannibal is his. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, I am absolutely thrilled and also confident that Trek in his hands will continue to be amazing. It should be amazing, you know.
I have to
and
agree.
If they do end up somehow, you know, asking me, "Hey, come back and, you know, do this role or whatever." And to be honest, I think it takes place before TNG and Voyager. So unless I play the grandfather of if I play the grandfather of Kim, that's the only way it would work. Or an alien. if I'm in prosthetics and I'm Romulan or I'm Vulcan or probably a little bit more heavier prosthetics. Yeah, I could be anybody if I'm alien in prosthetics.
That would be really cool to have some of the former cast members of other shows get onto the new show in some shape or form. Yeah.
I should message Brian as a joke and just go, "Brian, I'm so excited that you're going to be back. You're going to be producing Trek. At this point, I will play a phaser. I'll play a phaser." That's fine. Just someone has to just put me on stun and just, you know, fire me. That's all I want to be, you know, just in the background playing the phaser or console.
Yeah,
a console on the bridge. Yeah.
Ask him about if he got all those scripts that I sent him. You know, so you ask him about that when you talk to him.
All right. Did you send a whole load of scripts to him? Did you?
No, I sent. I'm kind of ashamed to admit this, but I sent a fan script to the newly created Twitter account Trek Writers Room for the new Trek that's coming out. And I'm a little red in the cheeks right now because I have to admit I was just like,
yeah, I'm confirming this. He is.
I'll tell you right now, Tristan. I mean, Trek is the one show in history that has been famous for that. Where they'll get spec scripts from Joe Blow in Idaho, and if it's good, they'll call your ass in. They'll be like, "Hey, Joe." You're in a small town USA. Come on down. You know, it's like the Price is Right game show. Just random people are pulled on down. So I mean, it really, really is the only show that does that.
Yeah.
A lot of the other shows out there, you have to jump through hoops. You have to have mm-hmm. agent representation. You have to have a resume that shows that you've written already for X amount of years and blah 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 to even come close to being a writer, you know. So so don't, you know, don't be embarrassed by that, and keep, you know, I would keep pursuing that avenue if I were you. It wouldn't hurt. So
well, I mean, if if Garrett Wong tells me to do something in the realm of Trek, I'm going to do it.
Yeah, what are you going to do? Ignore him? No.
Now, Garrett, I do have a question for you because you know we're talking about new Trek, we're talking about Hollywood and everything like that. Actually, one of the me on Twitter and you on Twitter, we actually one of the first conversations that we had online. I severely doubt that you remember this, but one of our first conversations was about the casting of Khan in Into Darkness.
And, oh, right.
Yeah, and sadly, you know, whitewashing is still a very prevalent issue, and you've been very vocal about this and about how it affects roles for Asian actors. During the course of your career, how has this affected you? And in your opinion, what do you think needs to change in order for this to get better?
Well, I mean, first of all, let's just, okay. I'm going to give props to JJ in that I did enjoy his first movie, being that I felt that the cast for yes. that of the original, when they recast the original cast, the TOS cast, I thought they did a great job. I mean, Carl Urban is great as the Doctor. Chris Pine is great as Kirk, you know, on down the line. Everybody was like, hey, all right, good job, you know. Yeah. Everything was wonderful. But at the same time, there is, you know, you can go online and you can see quotes from JJ saying, you know, when I was a kid, I just loved Star Wars. Star Trek, I never got it, and I still don't. I mean, he'll say that. He never, you know, he was never a fan of Star Trek. It was really more monetary than anything else for him to direct Trek, you know, and more prestige, I suppose. So, and, you know, Star Trek is about, you know, if you've heard IDIC, which is the acronym for Infinite Diversity and Infinite Combinations, Trek has always been the most open to multi-ethnic casting. You know what I'm saying? Say, all right, let's gonna have, like, look at Voyager. Look at the Voyager cast. You have the first, as far as I know, the first Native American character, right? The first Latino / Klingon character, the first Black Vulcan, you know? I mean, it's a very wide-ranging group of people.
Yeah, we just talked about this a couple shows ago.
And what does he do? He chooses the whitest, the palest, and the most devoid of color individual actor on the planet in Benedict Cumberbatch. And I thought, oh my gosh, you know, what are you doing? What are you doing? You had the shot out, you had the chance, but you just kind of went with who was popular at the time, right? Nothing against his character. Nothing against him as an actor, excuse me. Benedict is definitely a very, very accomplished actor, a very talented actor. But if you look at Khan and you talk about what is Khan's ethnic background, who is he? What describe him? Well, he is a genetically engineered super warrior is what Khan is. Khan's ethnic background is Sikh, which is, you know, an East Indian individual. All right, Ricardo Montalban is not Sikh, no, but he's definitely a person of color. So that's great. And I sit here and I think about, and I think you remember this, Tristan, I talked about how what blew me away is that when J.J. Abrams produced the show Lost, one of his characters, one of his main characters was the character of Saeed. And Saeed, yes, is an Arab name, but Saeed is actually played by Naveen Andrews, who is British Sikh. He is Sikh. And it's just like, oh my God, your chance is right there. That should have been Khan.
Oh man, I didn't even think about that. You just made me even angrier.
He is as good or better than Benedict Cumberbatch as an actor. If you watched him in the movie English Patient, he blew it up. He was amazing. He was absolutely amazing. And maybe that's a little cliche of me because he was a bomb diffuser in the British Army and I just said he blew it up. But he was really, he was great. He was great in that movie and he would have a perfect choice because look at his body type. He is like a bigger, you know, he's more barrel-chested than Benedict. Benedict is a toothpick compared to Naveen Andrews, right? Mm-hmm. So look, if you watch the new Trek movie, the second Trek film around, the second Trek that JJ did, 50 to 75% of the scenes that Benedict is in, he's wearing a bloody overcoat, a trench coat, to make him look bigger because he's not big. You know, he's not big at all. And I tweeted this. I put this on Twitter about how, you know, how ridiculous of a choice it was to cast Khan as Benedict. And I got slammed by all these Benedict Cumberbatch girly fans that were just jumping all over me going, how dare you? We love him. He's the best. And they're like, don't you know? Benedict spent 6 weeks with a personal trainer. And I thought, all right. I said, let's put this into perspective. Take average skinny British guy who doesn't work out, give him 6 weeks of training, and now his body is of the shape and girth of a North American male who's never worked out before. So now he's up to, you know, because we know what buff looks like. Or what, you know, muscular looks like in the U.S. And it ain't Benedict Cumberbatch, right? And if he was going to go off of popularity, no. But if he wanted to stick with the popularity contest of the most popular person out there, and if you're going to go with a genetically engineered superhero, you should have cast Dwayne Johnson as The Rock. Rock as Khan. He should have been Khan, right? The Rock as Khan.
That would have been
or
interesting.
Naveen Andrews. That would have been interesting. You would have had somebody who really would have been believable when he defeated this 48 Klingon in that one scene. But with Benedict, no, not believable. And they should have kept him as Harrison. And then as that, they had that shot where they showed the other stasis tubes, right? And he's all talking about his crew.
Yes.
You know what?
Yes.
Harrison should have been the first officer, and they should have panned it across, and then boom, you see one stasis tube where Khan is really real Khan.
That
would have been amazing. And that would have been Naveen Andrews, or that would have been The Rock with one eyebrow up.
Oh, yeah, when we got that final shot, man. And it panned over, I thought we weren't going to see Benedict Cumberbatch. I thought we were going to see an actual person of color, and it was like, oh, it was a ruse the whole time.
Yeah. That's what they should have done. Am I right? They should have done
that. You're totally right.
Absolutely right.
Yes.
My gosh.
I know. That was a
movie
serious
maker than J.J. Abrams. Oh my God. Just kidding.
Well, it just makes me sad because, you know, like there was a lot of backlash online when this happened, and I thought, okay, you know, like people were angry, people were louder. Maybe filmmakers will be a little bit more wary of this. But then, you know, like just like we have Ghost in the Shell and we have Doctor Strange coming out, speaking of Cumberbatch. And it's happening again. I mean, like, are you getting any more resistance online about this, or are more people joining with you in the cause of anti-whitewashing in Hollywood?
Yeah, well, no, there's definitely people talking about it. There's more of a discourse about it, and it's just I often feel that when it comes to Asian male actors or Asian actors in general, it's always the progress is like one step forward and then a step and a half or two steps backwards. There's always something that kind of pulls us back a little bit into what I refer to like the dark ages, you know, where they have to cast Caucasian actors as Asian. And it's just like, oh, come on, we don't have to do that anymore. It's, you know, stop it. But yeah, they still do that, unfortunately, because again, it's these producers and directors that feel that they need to cast the most popular person out there. They need to cast the Benedict Cumberbatches. They need to cast the Scarlett Johansons in the role of something that clearly they are not the same ethnic background, you know? So I'm a stickler for authenticity. I want it to be authentic. I don't want to see, you know, so-and-so made up to look Asian. You know, it doesn't make sense. Just cast an Asian person. I mean, it's just, it's just frustrating. It really is. And, you know, and the other thing with JJ, and like I said, I give him complete props on his first movie. I thought it was great. But I didn't like the fact that he made the edict. He said, anybody who's ever worked on Star Trek as a cast member other than Leonard Nimoy, or as a cameraman or visual effects supervisor or makeup artist, is not welcome on my version of Trek. So it was kind of like, you know, whenever a new president is voted in, the cabinet changes, right? So everyone kind of gets fired that used to be there, and there's a new everybody. Yeah. But when it comes to Trek, any show that's been around forever, it's always behooves you to cast or to hire people that already have years and years of experience doing that genre. You know what I'm saying? So doesn't make sense. And then, you know, when they had the premiere for the show, for the first movie when it came out, the Hollywood premiere, nobody from any of the Trek casts were invited except for Leonard Nimoy, who was in it. Everybody else was shunned. And I thought that was, you know, okay. Everybody on Next Gen gave 7 years of their life to Trek. Everybody on Voyager and Deep Space Nine gave 7 years. And you don't invite us. I remember watching Entertainment Tonight, and they were like, and here we go on the set. We're going down to the actual screening here. Premiere of the new Star Trek, J.J. Abrams Star Trek movie. And let's interview some of the people who've been invited. Shamar Moore, what do you think of it? So it's like, all right, good-looking African-American soap opera guy. Like, what do you have to do with Trek? Nothing. Okay, right. So it's just like, infuriating. Sorry, Shamar, if you're listening.
Yeah, no offense intended to Shamar.
Right, yeah, right.
No offense to Shamar. You still look good, buddy. So...
Still, you all should have been there.
Yeah, you know, and thank God, Rod Roddenberry. You know that Rod was the one who invited all of us. Rod sent out a, you know, mass email to everyone saying, hey, I feel bad that the premiere, JJ, didn't invite anybody. So I am actually screening the movie at the Paramount Studios screening theater, the big one, and I'm inviting everybody. Everybody who ever worked, that's whether you're a makeup artist or cameraman, actor, all of you are invited. So we actually saw the reboot at Paramount, you know, a week and a half before it came out in the theaters. And I was so blown away that I ended up seeing the movie 15 times in the theater after that. I just kept watching it over and over again. Yeah, I was like so
excited. You tripled my record there.
Yeah, I really...
I went to see it 5 times. You? I thought that was a lot.
I beat you out, yeah.
Big time.
And then the Saturn Awards came around, you know, a year and a half later, and one of the guests of honors was J.J. Abrams, so it was rumored that he was going to come to the after party, so I planted myself at the doorway of the after party waiting for him to show up, and he did, and I go, hey, J.J., I said, hey, thanks so much for the invite for the premiere, really sarcastically like that. And then he kind of looked, he got uncomfortable. He got a little nervous. He looked down on the floor. He's like, I said, but that's okay. Because I went and paid to see your movie 15 times in the theaters afterwards. And I paid for fans that were in line behind me too. He was like, he looked up and he's like, wow. Like, he didn't expect me to say that. So I kind of went from, I want to hang you, I want to lynch you, to here I am bowing down to you, you know, in a way. So. So if you ever want to get something negative across to somebody, you have to sandwich it or at least show something, you know, say something extremely positive and gracious right behind it. You know, that's the way
good
to get
strategy.
It
strategy.
So. A compliment sandwich.
Yeah. Yeah,
there you go. Compliment sandwich.
There you go.
That's cool.
Well, that's it.
Well, speaking of finding actors with Trek experience, a few years ago, you revisited the character of Harry Kim for voice work with Star Trek Online.
Yes, correct.
Was that difficult for you to go back and find that character, or was it like riding a bike?
It was like riding a bike. It really was. I was, when they called me up, they said, oh God, we finally got a hold of you. Cause I kind of left Hollywood back in 2005. It's been, you know, I took off. And mainly because I got very jaded. I was the one actor in Trek asked to direct an episode and I was the first to be turned down, in the history of Star Trek. So that, but that's partially on me. I did an interview with TV Guide magazine and the reporter was like, so do you have any criticisms of the show, Voyager? And I said, well, I said, not that I'm going to tell you. And he said, oh, this is off the record. This is definitely off the record. And I said, all right.
Oh,
so I said, well, I felt the writer producers of Voyager do not take the risk they could have to make the show better than it already is. So it was a very well-worded response. But what I was referring to was the very, you know, when we were all cast in the show, back in 1994, we had a lunch meeting with the executive, with Rick Berman, who I'm going to jump into a time machine and put a gun to his head. So Rick Berman was there, and he told us, he said, listen, everybody, congratulations, your life's going to change. You guys are all now on the new Star Trek show. And for those of you playing human characters, I need you to downplay your roles. I need you to deliver your lines with less emotion, more two-dimensional, more militaristic, because this is the only way to make the aliens look real. And I sat there going, what? I go, are you crazy? The only thing people are going to think of is like, these actors suck. Because, you know, when you go two-dimensional, you end up being a little bit more stiff, more not as And it's funny because I remember I jumped into an AOL chat room about Star Trek in the early days, and someone made a comment saying that my acting was so horrible that I should be that I have less talent than a fry cook at McDonald's. Right. So they were totally like trashing me. And I sat there and I just remember that first year every time. And this was said by Rick Berman at that first meeting. He said, if you choose to go against what I say, you put too much emotion into your role, into your delivery of your scene, you will get a memo which tells you to reshoot that scene. So I tried it. Wow. Season one, I was like, all right, I'm going to try a little something. And so I get a little memo saying, sorry, you got to reshoot that. So then I gave it a few more months. I thought, okay, I'm going to sneak a little bit more. I'm going to add a little bit more juice into my acting in this scene. Got another memo. So I tried it twice. I got my hand slapped twice. And then I towed the line, right? But, you know, through 7 years, you're gradually able to turn the heat up a little bit so that they wouldn't know. But a lot of people don't know. Kate Mulgrew had to shoot 30 to 40 scenes, reshoot them in the first season alone. 30 to 40 scenes.
Wow.
There were times where Janeway was crying in season one. Do you see Janeway cry ever?
Nope.
No. You know, it's like, nope.
I can think of one time, maybe.
But the point being is that it was his version of what he thought Trek should be. And I didn't speak up about it because I was young. It was my first job. I didn't say anything. And in essence, me saying that to TV Guide, I put my foot in my mouth, and that reporter, I've already told him, I said, I don't care how long I live, you'll never get an interview from me again. Because ultimately, when I went to go ask to direct Voyager, that issue of TV Guide was sitting on the coffee table in the office, production office, and they had read it. And so they kind of took offense to that, and they thought, oh, okay, if that's what you think, then we're not going to let you direct. And it hurt so much because I felt I wanted to direct sci-fi. I wanted to direct Star Trek Voyager. I wanted to put my stamp on what I believed how awesome Trek could be. Whereas every other person that has directed Star Trek that is also a series regular, and we're talking about, you name it, Jonathan Frakes, LeVar Burton, mm-hmm. all those guys, they're great guys, but they directed to get in the union. They wanted their union card, the Directors Guild of America card. You see, I didn't really care so much. Yeah, I could have gotten my card, but I wasn't someone who was like, wow, it's the end all be all. That's what I want. And so that alone, that really kind of, I felt I was betrayed in a way, but that's because they felt they were betrayed. They thought that I betrayed them in saying that what I said to TV Guide. So since 2005, I've been out of it. I haven't really been doing anything specifically in Hollywood. I left Hollywood, and it's taken me literally a decade to get over that pain. So to the point where when they called me up for Star Trek Online, I said, oh yeah, okay, I'll come in there. And I actually was one of two actors to actually go up to Northern California and to do the taping there, where the recording up there, whereas everyone else who did voice work, just they went to a local LA studio, sound studio, and they just patched it through. Myself and Denise Crosby were the only two that went to Northern California to Cryptic. And I'll tell you, they said, we need you to give us the voice of Captain Kim. I said, no problem. So I made him, more captainly, more, I guess, there's a little bit more gravitas to the voice. And then when they asked me to do Harry, I said, okay. So I pumped my voice up an octave or so, and I did the Harry voice, and it came back really easily. And you know, again, if you play Star Trek Online, anyone who plays STO, you know which actors were into it when they actually recorded the lines, because you can hear it. You can hear the character's voice, and then you know who was in there. Like, all right, I'm here for the paycheck. You know, let me just get this
right. Right.
You know, I'm not naming any names. I'm just gonna say it's very
true.
Play the game, and you're gonna know who gave a shit and who didn't. Yeah, exactly. That's it.
By the way, how did that feel, Captain Kim? I just have to interject with that. Finally, right? Finally.
Fine, but finally is sort of like, it almost, it's with an afternote or it's with an asterisk in a way, because it took Star Trek Online to promote me, or it took, if you read the books, if you read the Star Trek books, it takes the novels that are post Voyager to promote me. They couldn't promote me while the show was running. I mean, are you kidding me? I mean, honestly, there should be a Starfleet regulation. If you die and come back to life, automatic promotion.
Well, you would have been admiral in the second season.
Exactly.
Yeah.
all the poop that Kim went through.
Poor Harry.
You know, yeah, 5-star admiral, basically, whatever.
Yes.
So, yeah.
He would have been the head of Starfleet Command via Delta Quadrant by that point.
Oh, yes. Yeah. My God.
Now, you're talking a lot about the, you know, like the legacy of Trek and the furthering of Trek, you know, like with STO and with the novels and everything like that. Just a couple of episodes ago, we started talking about the legacy of Voyager and how it was going to be perceived in the future. Now, you're a big sci-fi fan and, you know, and very unabashed about how much you love sci-fi. How do you think Voyager will be perceived by future sci-fi fans?
I think it stands the test of time. I think it's going to be perceived quite well. I'm working with a group here in Canada, in Alberta, called VTV. It's VulcanTelevision.ca. And I'm going to be contributing some content to them where I'm going to actually go through each episode of Voyager and give my thoughts on pre-production, production, post-production, everything.
Wow.
So I'm going to be talking about that. Yeah,
that's going to be awesome.
On the Trek portion of it. Yeah, so that'll be kind of cool. That'll be like my live, you know, vlog, basically. So I'll be doing that. VTV, V as in Victor, T as in Tom, V as in Victor again. There's a town of Vulcan, Alberta, and so that's where it's based out of. There's actually a town of Vulcan in Canada. It's the Star Trek capital of Canada, basically. So VTV.ca for the Canada, and that's something that I will be providing some content for those guys in the coming year. But I think it'll stand the test of time, and I honestly believe that Voyager, of all the different incarnations of Star Trek as a television series, it is still the best show to watch if you're a woman, because it is the most empowering. It is by far. I when I sit there at conventions and I have tons of men that come up to get an autograph, and they're there with their daughters, and 9 times out of 10, when I ask, like, so you're two girls here, do they watch? And he's like, oh no, I've tried to get them into it, but they don't really watch with me. And I sit there and I look at the girls, you know, and they're usually like 7 and 9 or something like that. I go, young ladies, listen to me right now. If daddy just says to watch Voyager, you should take the time to watch it for him, because this is going to be your bonding time with your father. You're going to remember this for a long time. And let's not, you know, let's face it, we all pass on at some point. So, you know, when you guys are still when you're the last two girls standing, you're going to remember the time that you spent with dad watching Voyager. And then I tell them, if you watch Voyager starting right now, it's going to subconsciously affect you. It's going to make it so that you will find a better paying job. You will find a better husband. You will find, I list all these little things that will happen, because let's face it, if you're a girl and you're watching a show where the woman calls the shots and she's the end all be all, there's nobody with more authority than Janeway on Voyager. That's it.
Yep.
It's Janeway, you know?
Absolutely.
And I tell them, and I say, and if you watch it, you're also thumbing your nose up at the people who are against a Voyager in the beginning, because then I tell them the story that, you know, we premiered in January of 95, right? On a Monday, on a Tuesday, the production office, the voicemail was filled with haters calling up saying, how dare you allow a woman to be in command? How dare you? You know, I mean, people actually threatened our lives. We were threatened with bomb threats, scares, this and that. Yeah. We're going to kill you because you were associated with the Star Trek show that allows a woman to be captain. No way, Jose. So, so I just tell these young girls, I go, you know what? You know, this is something that you should watch. And I will continue to say that for as long as I live. I mean, literally, I think every girl from the age of 8 to 12 should start watching Star Trek Voyager. That's it.
I have to completely agree. I mean, Voyager aired while we were in our adolescence, and I know that it did have that subliminal impact. I didn't even realize at the time how important it was to watch Women in Charge, to see a female engineer. I mean, the impact that's had on girls entering STEM fields is tremendous, and you're absolutely right about all of it. And also, I watched Star Trek with my dad. That was our bonding thing, too. And so you're right about that as well.
Yep. Yeah.
All of
it. So in terms of strong, yeah, to have one strong character, Janeway, is great, but to have two in that you have, or three, excuse me, you have not only Janeway, but Torres. She's the Scotty. She's the Scotty of Voyager.
That's right.
Right. And then Seven of Nine, also strong characters. So you have the trifecta of strong female characters. You know, nobody's washing a dish. No one's, you know, cleaning. No one's vacuuming the bridge. You know, yeah, exactly. Neelix is the cook, right? So it's really,
and go
it's
Neelix.
Very, yeah. It turns everything on its end. It turns it all upside down in a good way.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
Yeah. We were just talking in our last episode, we were talking about how representation matters. It absolutely matters, and Voyager was a personification of that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Voyager did
more, and much more so than the other ones, right? I mean, I see much better representation across the board than TOS, than TNG, and DS9, and Enterprise, to be honest. I do.
Yeah.
I really do. So.
Yeah. Have to agree. Well, I think we're going to start wrapping this up, but before we go, we want to know which conventions you're attending in the near future, because I know you do a lot of conventions, and I would love to put the word out there so people can come find you. And is there anything else that you'd like to promote?
I'm going to be at the Northern Fan Con, which is not this weekend, but the next weekend. It's in British Columbia, so Northern BC. And that's my next convention. And then after that, in June, I will be at Denver Comic Con, which has seen growth like no other. It really is. It's the age of the geek right now. It's unbelievable.
That
convention, Denver Comic Con, started in 2012. 2012, they were like, the promoters were like, okay, we will be extremely happy if we get about 8,000 people to show up. We'll be really jazzed. Well, year one, 17,000 showed up. Okay.
Wow.
Year two, 35,000 showed up. Year three, it shot up to 65,000. Year four, which was last year when I went, year four, they were either they broke or were just shy of 100,000. So if you think about it, you know, if you think of, compare that to San Diego Comic Con, which is the granddaddy in terms of amount of people that go to it, sheer size, sheer amount of people, fans that show up. San Diego Comic-Con, first year was 800. Second year was 1,000. You know, we're talking incremental. By fourth year, they were nowhere close to 100,000 by year four. And that's what happened in Denver. So I'm going to be at Denver this year, again, 2 years in a row. I've sort of made a bit of a niche for myself in that most actors, when they come to a convention, the promoters will say, okay, well, thanks so much for your participation. We'll give you a call in about 4 to 6 years. You know, they'll kind of go through a rotation and come back. But what I tell them, I'll say, listen, how about I come back again the next year? And in return, I will moderate some of whatever panels that you have open that you need moderating, that you need somebody who can handle, who won't fanboy over, you know, whoever is there, you know, that can control themselves, you know. And so they're like, oh, that's intriguing to have a celebrity moderator. Sure. So that's kind of been my bread and butter lately is been to moderate some of these panels that have been out there that these different cons have. So I'll be at the Denver. So those are my next two cons, Denver Comic Con and Northern Fan Con are the two next conventions that I'll be doing. I will try to post regularly on my Twitter account for people to know where I'll be going. So if you go to Garrett, at Garrett RWANG, you have to fill the middle initial in there. I did that to copy Jerry Ryan. Jerry Ryan was the first proponent of Twitter, and she did Jerry L. Ryan because it stands for Jerry Lynn Ryan. Lynn is the name she went by when she was younger, you know, when she was a kid. And so I thought, oh, I'll be cute. I'll be like her. So I put at Garrett RWANG, not knowing that someone else would take just Garrick, W-A-N-G, which is the logical place that any human being would go to.
Right.
And I remember tweeting, I tweeted this kid. I was like, this person, I go, hey, what's up? And they're like, oh, hey, you're the real Garrett. I'm like, yeah. And who are you? I'm Singapore Garrett. I go, oh, okay. So he's this 14-year-old kid in Singapore, basically, that has that account name. Your profile picture should just be, it should just be text saying, not the dude from Trek. And that is what
not
right.
The dude from Trek.
Yeah. And the same Twitter, my address for Twitter is the same for Instagram also. So you can follow me on either.
Oh, I didn't know you were on Instagram. So I'm glad you said that. Yeah, I'll definitely follow you there.
Yeah, it's private, but I, you know, as long as you're a legit account, I will let you follow me. Instead of, you know, there's so many bot accounts out there that are trying to follow people. So I made that private, but I don't discriminate against anybody as long as I know that you're human. I'll go ahead and accept you on Instagram. So
right
well,
on.
Thank you so much for your time. This is a literal dream come true, and it's been an absolute blast talking with you, and thank you so much for taking the time out of your day.
Yeah, we really appreciate it.
And you guys, yeah, it was great talking to you. Thanks, guys. Appreciate
it. Thanks. We'll come see you in Vegas this year.
Yay.
We're both going to be there.
I'll be in Vegas. Forgot about that. Yep. Come up and say hi.
We'll do.
All right, guys.
All right. Bye. Thanks so much.
See ya. You got it.
So that was a lot of fun.
That happened. Wow. Our first main cast member to be interviewed on TTJ. It is official. It is Garrett Wong.
Garrett Wong, Harry Kim. So fantastic. I told my mom that I was going to be interviewing Garrett Wong today, and she squealed. It was awesome.
Oh, nice. And see, I haven't even told my mom yet that I've interviewed Garrett Wong. And it'll be a little Mother's Day surprise when I call her, because we are recording this right before Mother's Day weekend.
Oh.
Well, as great as this has been, this is not the only thing that's happening on Trek FM, although I would argue it's the most important one for this week.
Yeah, no, that's goes without saying.
Is that fair? Yeah,
that's
okay.
Fair.
But, I mean, if you want to find out what else is happening on the other shows, well, here.
Previously on Trek.fm, the 602 Club.
You know, I think part of it has to do with, yeah, and that is a good point. You know, you could draw maybe more of a parallel between Roger Moore and Cary Grant than you could Cary Grant and Sean Connery.
Literary Treks.
One of my issues I had with this whole series is as a graphic novel, is I was expecting one continuous story. And each chapter was an issue that was separate from each other.
Meta Treks.
Wait, your idea of Ryza is like Fairhaven.
Yeah, I like the quiet, peaceful. I mean, every time I watch one of those,
I don't want to see those Fairhaven characters in bikinis. I'm sorry.
Women at Warp.
The only way that she can get through the trauma is remembering what her real story is, and that's getting this puppy home and taking care of it.
I wish that Captain Jamie Nelson said, "Let's get this puppy home."
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So you check those out after you're done with this, whatever. And, you know, just get involved with all the Trek talk. I mean, it is good. I'm poo-pooing it this week just because we scored a really great interview with Garrett. It was so much fun. But none of these shows are possible without the help of our folks on Patreon. And we cannot all thank you enough for helping keep this network alive. Because with 20-plus shows, new stuff coming out on a daily basis, oftentimes more than one show, this costs a lot. And so anybody who has become a monthly subscriber, we thank you. But especially on To The Journey, we thank our associate producers. And those lovely people are Jamie Deuce, Kenneth Tripp, Bruce Lish, Dante Hopkins, and Aaron Harvey. Thank you so much, guys. We really do appreciate you so very much. And if you are not a monthly subscriber and you haven't checked this out yet, what are you waiting for? Go to patreon.com/trekfm. Please consider helping us out. It really does go a long way. However, if you don't have any change jingling in your pocket, just desperate to be put to use, go on to iTunes and leave us a review. This helps us out tremendously because this is the basic way most people find our podcast. So the more reviews we have, the more ratings we have, the more people that find us, the more people that join the party, the more fun! And what's not to love about that? So please consider doing that. And if you do, we'll give you a shout out on the show. I don't know if we're going to possibly be able to top this next week, but we're going to have to try.
We're going to have to try, but I don't really want to tell anybody what we're going to do next week because this is so big. Let's just chew on this fantastic interview for one more week.
Yeah, I just kind of want to revel in the moment for a little bit. And I mean, think about this. We said that this week's episode was going to be a surprise. Look at what happened. If we make it a surprise next week, who knows?
Who knows what will happen? But you'll have to tune in next week to find out. So until then, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!